I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
Hi, everybody. You're tuned in to the HeritageRadioNetwork.com. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about money. Making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, with my co-host, Andrew, my son, Newman.
Do you have to do that every week?
Yep.
Why?
That's required.
Required by who?
And my producer and my engineer, Jack Inslee.
So Jack Inslee requires you to do this?
Yep.
Yeah.
Is this true?
I'm not, yeah.
We need a call sign before every show?
All siblings need to be disclaimed.
Relatives.
Relatives.
Right.
No, it's not my idea.
It's my idea, and it's my show, so it's Flash Talks.
Don't I get a say in this matter?
Well, you're going to have, we have a designated segment of the show, and it's all about you, Drew. So.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it about?
Andrew versus the law, remember?
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, you are getting some billing here. It's not top billing yet, but, you know, you keep working, doing the good work. You might get some higher billing. How do you like that? Okay. And today's show, we're talking about bad investments can become tax refunds.
Oh, is this is part two of the taxes?
Well, we're in week three.
Week three?
Week three of tax season.
So what was week two?
Week two last week was the real estate. How to deal with your real estate.
What was week one?
Week one was, what do you do with those 1099s, those W-2s?
That's
you
right.
Really, you got to check in.
My mind is going.
Check in.
Well, my older age, I'm losing things.
Your mind is going because you went and it fell into a beer bottle last night.
I did not. You started it by getting me drunk at dinner.
Okay.
Thank you very much for dinner. It was very excellent.
We broadcast live.
Can we have a conversation?
Well, I'm doing my stuff.
Go do your stuff.
We broadcast live every Thursday from 4:30 to 5. If you can't tune in live, where all our shows are archived on the website, and you can download a free podcast from the website. Call in while we're streaming live. We'd love to hear from you. The phone number is
718-497-2128. That number again is 718-497-2128. Look, I remembered that.
It took a year. Or email.
We've only been on, Jack, what have we been on since August?
Okay.
Come on.
9 months. Or you can email us during the show or after the show, any comments, any questions, info@heritageradionetwork.com. So that's the end of all the housekeeping we have to do. We're talking today about losses. There's a lot of different losses that the tax code allows you to deduct, but they have to be deducted and treated different ways depending on where the losses came from. So the biggest, most common loss that you can deduct on your tax return is the capital loss.
Capital gains?
Capital loss. I'm talking about losses.
Just losses in general.
Losses. So today it's losses. So how do you get a capital loss? Let me give you a little story how this works. A capital loss comes from something that you purchased at one point and then sold and you didn't make money on it. That's a loss, right? You paid $5,000. A typical example would be $5,000 for a stock. And you held on to it, you owned it for 7 years, and the stock is doing terrible, and it's only worth $2,500. So your loss in that case was, what did I say, $7,000?
I wasn't listening.
Okay, I think I said $7,000. And your cost base is $7,000, and you sell it for $2,500. Therefore, you have a $4,500 loss. So that's called a capital loss. Now, you can do this 1,000 times a year, and some stocks will make money, some stocks will lose money, and at the end of the year, you add up all your gains and all your losses to come up with a number of total gains. There's long-term gains and there's short-term gains and losses. I'm sorry, short-term losses and short-term and long-term losses. If you held the stock more than 12 months, it's called a long-term loss or long-term gain. If you held the investment for less than 12 months, it's a short-term gain or loss. I'm not going to go into too much today. That there is a difference in tax treatment, tax rates. But let me just explain how the loss will work. So you have a $4,500 loss for my example. So if you have no other transactions that year, you are allowed to deduct every year up to $3,000 of losses on your tax return, and you carry forward to the following year your unused loss, and you can use it again next year against other capital gains, or you can use it up to $3,000 in the following year. And the following year, if you had no other transactions, you would have $1,500 to carry forward. So what does this mean in on your tax return? What this means is, let's say you make $50,000 in your job on your W-2, and you have this stock loss this year of $3,000 against your $50,000 of income. And so your net income is $47,000, and then your other deductions, you pay tax on the $47,000. So you get to reduce your income by the amount of loss, and therefore you will get a larger refund or a smaller tax bill. That's how you can turn a loss into a tax refund.
Excellent.
Isn't that a great thing?
Makes perfect sense.
I mean, it eases the pain a little bit of the money that you actually lost in the stock.
Mm-hmm.
Now, capital losses don't have to be restricted to stocks. They could be bonds. They could be anything you held for investment. You could have bought some artwork.
What about a house?
No, a house is different.
You can have a loss in a house?
Well, not your primary house.
Okay, only rental property houses?
Yes, and I'm going to talk about that too.
Okay.
So the loss can come from anything you held for investment. Now, if you bought artwork as a collectible, coin collection, or something, or if you invested in a small company, you bought the stock and then it's still stock, but it's a small business. You know, though, it doesn't have to be the Wall Street kind of stocks. Mm-hmm. It could be any kind of stocks. So that's what would generate a capital loss. Okay? And you offset it. Now, let's give you another example. Suppose you have the stock here and you have $4,500 loss. And now you have another stock. You have McDonald's stock.
Mm-hmm.
And you bought it when it was $500. And now you're selling it and it's worth $5,000. So now your gain is $4,500,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly the same amount as your loss.
Wow, it's crazy how that worked out.
Isn't that great?
That's amazing.
So what happens is you offset, you net the two together, you get the $4,500 profit from the McDonald's stocks, you get the $4,500 loss from your bad investment, you pay zero tax because you net the two together. You pay zero additional tax or you don't on that McDonald's stock.
Mm-hmm.
Let's use another example. Let's suppose your McDonald's stock, you bought it for $500 and you sold it for $1,000. So now you have a $500 gain. You would take your $500 gain and offset it against your $4,500 loss, mm-hmm. and you'd have a net loss of $4,000, of which $3,000 can be picked up this year on your tax return and the other $1,000 gets carried forward to next year. Okay, so it could work anyway. Always, if you have losses, This is a little bit of advice. You can't do it. It's too late for doing 2010, but 2011. If you have losses, you know, you made a bad investment, you have a couple of bad investments, and your broker or you decide to sell, and now you're sitting there and you're looking at overall $10,000 of losses. By the end of the year, speak to your broker or try to find some gains that you can take out against your losses. And this way, this is a way to get some of your portfolio increased without paying taxes on the gains. You got what I said? You understand what I said?
Well, wouldn't you have a carry forward anyway? So
yeah, but it's a great way. Suppose you have a $10,000 cumulative loss from bad investments mm-hmm. this year, and then you have a couple of real good winners. Suppose you have Apple stock, mm-hmm. right? You have Apple stock, and it's sitting there, and you got $17,000 of gain sitting there, and you know, you think that the Apple stock is not going to continue to rock and roll the way it was. You made the good money, so you have that $10,000 loss. If you wanted to sell this. Many ways to do it, but you could sell all $17,000 worth of
and offset
against the $10,000, so you only pay tax on the $7,000 remaining capital gain instead of the full $17,000. Or you can sell up to $10,000 worth of Apple stock,
mm-hmm.
keep $7,000 if it's still in your portfolio, and offset, and you get that $10,000 tax-free, so mm-hmm. to speak. You know, this is what people do. They net their gains against losses when they have losses sitting there.
Uh-huh.
Or if they have gains, they try to find losses in their portfolio to bring down their tax burden. So losses bring down your tax burden. That's the whole point.
That's very interesting.
Okay.
I wish I had a brokerage account.
Well, So stop putting money away in a brokerage. Why stop buying stock? Go to Fidelity or Charles Schwab. You don't need a big account. Start small. And that's how I started. So then the next kind of loss you can have is a business loss. Mm-hmm. This is something that a lot of people don't bother to do. And I recommend you do this. Here we go. We have a person who might be having a regular job, and they have an idea, they have a good business thought, and they start to develop this business, and they invest some money into researching and buying basic stuff. Let's just say you decide you want to do some side work being consultant, let's just say, and during the day you work at Abercrombie and Fitch, okay? So during the day you have this day job, and then in the evening you say, okay, I have this great idea that I want to go and find customers, and I'm going to give them advice on retail, because mm-hmm. I'm really good at retail. So you start to, you get business cards made up, you have, you buy some computer software, and you might buy a printer and send out emails and do all sorts of things and go to meet people, take a couple of potential customers out to lunch. And then at the end of the year, it didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
You have real business expenses there that you can deduct on your tax return as a business loss.
It's like a Schedule C.
It wasn't a hobby. It might add up to a few thousand dollars. Now, mm-hmm. if you have that day job in Abercrombie and Fitch, you make $50,000, and you have some expenses that you incurred, it might have incurred $4,000 worth of expenses. You put that on your return. You report that loss. You pay tax on $46,000 instead of $50,000. So there's an opportunity to test the waters. If it doesn't work out, you get a little bit of reimbursement from the government, so to speak. It's a good thing. And a lot of people do try businesses, and then they don't calculate and tally up what they spent, and they don't deduct it because they didn't really make any money. That's a big, big misunderstanding. If you didn't make any money, you can't take any expenses. Yes, you can. If they're real, legitimate business expenses, even if you made a few bucks and your expenses exceed the income, take the expenses and create a loss and deduct it on your tax return. It's totally legal and something you should not shortchange yourself.
I'm good.
You're good.
I that doesn't sound like a capital loss, but
no, that's a business loss.
Okay. You said
no. I moved on to the second one. Now we're going to move on to the third kind.
What was the title of the show?
Bad investments can become tax refunds.
Okay.
Investments could be investment into a business.
I was just wondering.
Okay. Now,
just clarifying, because I have a short-term memory problem.
Yeah, you had too much beer last night. That's what you had.
I am very tired.
Yeah, because you've been drinking.
You've been drinking.
Now the last kind of loss.
You've been drinking today.
No, not yet.
Oh, what are you doing tonight?
After I do my show and I have to go home and deal with my taxes, I might have a drink or two.
Oh, you're doing your taxes today?
No, not really. But I have, if I do have
what
to
is
do
that?
My
Why would you lie to me?
Well, I don't know. I have to do my bills tonight. Okay, so anyway, the last kind of loss I want to talk about is passive losses. We talked about this last week, and I want to just group it with the losses that we're talking about today. I told you last week that if you have a rental property, that you generally will run losses because depreciation will create a loss on paper. It's not a real loss. It could be, you could have a real cash flow loss. The difference between an accounting loss and a cash flow loss could usually mean depreciation. Well, let's just give an example. Suppose you collect $15,000 a year in rental income. You pay your mortgage, you pay your real estate taxes, you pay insurance, you pay for maintenance in the building, you do some repairs, and the total of all of those things tally up to be $12,000. You have an overall $3,000 positive cash flow. But that's not your accounting income. Your accounting income takes those numbers and then adds one more line called depreciation. We take the value of the place that you're renting out, the house, and we depreciate it over 27 years or 39 years, depending on if it's a residential or commercial property. And that creates what's called a rental loss. That's your tax loss. You can deduct this loss dollar for dollar, up to unless you make more than $150,000 a year, then you're limited. So there's another opportunity. There's another opportunity to take another loss and reduce your income. We have a caller. Let's hear what the caller has to say. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm a recurring caller. I really like your show. this is kind of off the subject of depreciation a little bit, but Like, I always remember the host of Entertainment Tonight got her legs insured.
Got her legs insured.
Yeah, insured. Or, you know, I know football players get their arms insured.
Right.
How do those insurance companies deal with depreciation? Like, if they get older, they're worth less, their premium should go down.
I don't think that they depreciate that. I don't think that's considered a depreciable asset.
It's probably a set value on the object, and then it just...
It diminishes. Once, the value diminishes. But I don't think it's a depreciation concept.
I don't think it's the same thing.
I think there's just, as the asset... The asset, the legs or the arms, get older, their values diminish. Frankly, you know, they can... Suppose you say, my legs are worth $1 million. You insure for $1 million. And then, you know, when you're 43 years old, they're going to say, we can't insure you for $1 million. Those legs aren't worth $1 million anymore. So they devalue the policy. But it's probably based on life expectancy tables and other things, not a depreciation concept like a real estate building.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
See ya.
Okay, bye.
Okay, so we want to wrap up the losses. We're going to come back and tell you how much money you're going to save on this. We'll be back in a minute, okay? Educated with money. He's well dressed, not funny, and not much to say in most conversations, but he'll put the bill in all situations.
This is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to The Main Course Sundays at 12 p.m. with hosts Patrick Martins and Katie Kiefer. They examine issues from the interconnected worlds of agriculture, cuisine, and sustainability. They sit down with key players in the chain from producer to consumer, farmers, distributors, chefs, activists, and journalists. The Main Course explores every important component of the eating experience: how the farmers raise their product, the distribution channels that move the product, how the chefs prepare it, and how ethics and policy affect everyone involved. Again, that's The Main Course, Sundays at noon on the Heritage Radio Network.
Okay, Flash Talks Cash is back.
I wonder when our service announcement goes on.
They go on. It's tax season. They're really playing it.
Is it random?
Everybody needs to listen in to figure out how to do their taxes.
No, that sounded like an interesting show, but
yeah,
I want to know when we're on.
Well,
when's our service announcement?
Tune in to the radio station all the time, and then you'll figure it out. So let's just wrap up losses, please. So when I say you're going to save money on your taxes, let me tell you how it works. Let's say you have a $4,000 loss that you're going to be able to deduct on your tax return. If you're in a 30% tax bracket, you take the $4,000 loss times 30%, your refund or your tax savings that year will be $1,200. That's how it works, right? Mm-hmm. Four times. Yep. So if you have a loss, you should either get a larger refund or reduce your tax bill. And don't be afraid to take losses. You're not automatically going to be audited because you have a loss. Or, you know, if you have a loss year after year after year after year, especially on a business, mm-hmm. small business, you really have to examine that and make sure that you're in business to make money. If you're losing money year after year after year after year after year, they could call it a hobby loss and not allow that, they being the IRS. So if you lose money every year for year after year after year after year, you better rethink that position. But frankly, if you go and launch a business or you have one bad year or two bad years, you're entitled to take these losses. So take advantage of the tax laws because, listen, when you make money, believe me, the hand is out and you got to pay. So use the tax code in your favor. We're going to now go to our email bag, and our producer, Jack, is going to read us a couple of questions today.
How's it going? So we got some cool questions in the email bag this week. First one's from Amanda, and she says, Flash, if we donate a car to charity, can we use that deduction to bring down the amount we owe the IRS for past year's taxes?
That Amanda, she's got a good question.
Oh, come on. You can't use current.
Amanda doesn't know that. Now we have to tell her.
Only if she has charitable contributions in years past can she amend a return.
No. She's given a car now in
2011. But it doesn't offset her prior years.
Well, she owes taxes from prior years. And Amanda's being creative. She's saying, okay, I'll donate a car now. Will that offset your taxes for prior years?
No, it only goes in the year you're actually
doing. So what it actually will do is if you have a donation this year and in 2011, and so let's say your car, they only allow you $500. So you bring your car on these charitable deductions. If you're in a 30% bracket and you're $500, you're going to save $150 on your taxes. Mm-hmm. So your refund should be about $150.
Well, that's only if you get above
Let's assume that. So you get $150 additional refund because of that $500 contribution. So your refunds from 2011, if you still owe money for prior years, the IRS will take your refunds and apply it to your prior year. So effectively, you are getting to reduce your taxes. But if you're on an installment agreement, which they are, paying off the IRS, it's not going to help.
See, you're offering answers for questions that aren't in...
Well, I was just going one step
further. You're clarifying more than we need to know.
Next, Jack.
Next question comes in from Sarah. She says that, hey, Flash, I got a note in the mail from Personal Concepts about New York and federal labor laws notices, but it was addressed to the wrong business name and didn't look like it applied to me as I don't have employees. Is this something I need to worry about?
Yeah, that's a lot of spam. It's not a spam. It's junk.
Yeah, it's junk mail.
And they make it look very official.
It looks like a New York State thing.
Yes, and people constantly call and email about these notices saying, "Oh, they said I have to," and they're not cheap. They make you pay $120 for these posters that are just BS. They're not required. You get the right posters from the Department of Labor when you register.
They offer for free,
or you get the right posters from your insurance company when you have workers' comp and disability. So those are just a scam. Don't fall for them. So good catch, Sarah. So that's the end of the email bag this week, and we're going to move on to our new segment, Andrew versus the Law. Now we're going to read a case, and Andrew, this surprised me. You know, there are shysters in every area.
Is that the good, the bad, and the ugly?
Yes.
Yes, yes,
every,
it is.
Every Clint Eastwood movie.
No, I know.
Yes.
So I'm the good, you're the bad, and Jack's the ugly? Or
you got it.
Oh,
I don't think so, Drewster. Okay, so today I'm going to read a fraud case. I can't believe this one really surprised me. The French winemakers and dealers were convicted in one of the largest scandals in the history of the wine industry. Executives from wine estates, co-ops, and a wine broker and a wine merchant and a conglomerate wine company were convicted of selling millions of bottles of fake Pinot Noir to the U.S. firm Ernest and Julio Gallo. I can't believe this.
How do you sell fake wine?
Listen, it is believed 18 million bottles made from cheaper grape varieties than Pinot Noir was sold. The profits from these sales were $9.8 million. The fines levied range from $1,500 to €180,000. That's a lot of money. I don't know how much a euro. Euro is like more than a dollar.
$1.35 about.
So it's like, you know, $200,000 in fines or more. While the jail sentences range from 1 to 6 months. That's not enough jail time. Ernest and Julio Gallo sold this wine in the U.S. under the Red Bicyclette label. Gallo believes this was the only misrepresented label that they carry. Gallo also believes that only 20% of the Red Bicyclette label were affected. The overall demand for Pinot Noir grapes by Gallo exceeds the capacity of the French region of, I'm not good at this, Languedoc. That's a French region. At this time, Red Bicyclette is no longer being sold. The conviction has damaged the reputation of all wine originating from the Languedoc region, which serves as the important outlet of wine to the U.S. So,
how is this a question for me?
It's not a question.
So, how is this Andrew versus the law?
Well, Andrew,
I don't get it. You read a story.
So you think that
you got to read a story, and I get a
song. Now you get to tell me. I think it's appalling.
Well, I hate French. I hate the French.
Oh.
Those bastards think they're better than us. They're like,
ridiculous.
Our wine is so good.
Andrew versus the French.
Yes.
Oh, I got some things about the French.
No, wait a second. It's not about the French.
Whoa, can
it's
I talk?
It's about the criminal.
Can I talk?
The criminal who puts the
wine. It's
bad
the French
wine.
Thinking they're better than
no,
us and knowing
French.
Our wine better. That's who sold us the Pinot Noir.
Yeah, but
on top
it's
of that,
not
I respect
French.
Them. For thinking they could get away with it. This is like a Ponzi scheme kind of thing.
It's
like,
not a Ponzi scheme.
No, it's just
scheme.
Like it's like you think you're smarter than everyone else and no one's going to notice. And that's balls. That takes some serious balls on them. What? You don't like that word?
No. Oh, Jack.
Jack's loving this music, huh?
Jack, Jack doesn't agree with you. He's loving the French.
I don't think anyone loves the French.
Listen,
but
they make good wine.
Heritage Radio Network loves the French.
There we go. There we go. So I
not
think
the
it's
French.
Well, you know, while I was doing my research about the Andrew versus the Law segment today, I found recently these the strips that you use to read, I guess, your insulin, you know, or the diabetic things, you know, is that diabetes?
Yeah.
You know, they found that they were manufactured and they were defective and they were given poor readings because they weren't up to standards and stuff like that. So I'm like, man, that's really lousy. But wine? I mean, give me a break. There's nothing sacred out there.
No.
These thieves will steal anything. And
see,
now
I don't like getting over on people. Like, I don't like people taking advantage of
correct.
Other people. I don't, you know, like, shading the government, I totally get that. Because they do.
Shading the government?
Yeah, cheating the government a little bit.
You think that's okay?
Well, all right, let's look at it this way. They take 45% of our money, pretty much, for taxes, Social Security, all that good stuff.
Right.
They take 45% of my money.
Right.
What do I get in return from the government?
Well, you get to live in the greatest country in the world.
I got that. But I don't need my military budget spending to be this much. So that's why I don't mind cheating the government.
No.
But when you cheat other people,
wait,
it bothers me.
I don't agree with you. When you cheat the government, you cheating the government costs the rest of us tax-paying individuals more money.
Didn't
if you don't pay your fair share, the rest of us have to chip in.
I remember that number, Nuts. You said 45% of the country doesn't even pay taxes.
That's right.
So how am I cheating if 45% of the company... the country doesn't even pay taxes. Who am I cheating?
Well, the people who are paying are going to have to pay more because you didn't pay your fair share.
How about we reduce the budget?
Well,
that's why I don't mind
cheating.
Do you
want to talk about Obama's
budget? No, I don't
want to
talk about
that. Week?
What I want to talk about is I don't like when people cheat other people.
I don't like when people cheat, period. Because we all pay. Whether it's a black market product, whether it's just absolutely fraud, or it's tax evasion, everybody pays for it through increased insurance premiums.
I hate
more
insurance
taxes.
Too.
Well, but guess what? You can't get rid of it. It's part of our world.
I wish we could.
But we can't get rid of it. So that's the story with the French wine. I was really very surprised. I don't know what to do. Should we just make our own wine?
I don't like how the segment's working out. Because you didn't ask me anything. I just got to rant a little bit.
Yeah, well, ranting, yeah. So you
I don't mind ranting. But I like, you know, like I like a challenge.
He has a little.
What was it? There was no challenge there. You offered me nothing other than telling me a story.
I thought it was appalling.
It is appalling.
That's all I was talking about.
So how is it Andrew versus the Law?
Well, you managed.
You need to work on this segment a little bit. You need to tweak some things.
You managed.
You got good music, but you got no substance.
We have I have a little bit of news this week. This came out this week, which is going to affect a lot of people in this country filing their 2010 tax returns. The IRS has reversed their position, and breastfeeding supplies are now a medical deduction. You can deduct them on your tax return.
Awesome.
Isn't that something?
Very exciting stuff.
Well, it's big if you have to buy it, because I got to tell you, some of these costs are pretty expensive. And
like what? What does a pump cost?
The pump and the materials you need to do the pumping. I don't know. It's in this article. Let me see. I read it the other day.
You're not a speed reader, are you?
My name is Flash Fleming.
It doesn't mean you can speed read. And you have glasses on. Is there enough light in here? There's a lot of things that are going into you slowing this whole thing down right now. You want to pass it over to a younger person?
Okay. So the United States could save $13 billion a year in healthcare costs and prevent the premature. Oh, that's because that's if you breastfeed. I'm sorry. That's if you breastfeed. You save some healthcare costs.
Wait, they're giving you a tax break for breastfeeding?
Yeah, well, the breastfeeding supplies.
Okay.
The breastfeeding supplies. So you don't pay.
So breastfeeding's better for people than...
Oh, for sure. Always has
was
been.
I breastfed?
No.
Awesome.
Look at how you turned down.
I'm dejected.
Okay, so, here it is. The pump and the accessories needed to store milk cost about $500 to $1,000 for most mothers over the course of a year.
Nice.
So it's nice to get a write-off for that.
Mm-hmm. If your medical deductions are that high.
Yeah, well, that's the other part of it. Yeah, most people don't get qualified for that.
Is
but
it 7%?
7.5% of your adjusted gross income. But if you have losses, your adjusted gross income comes down, and therefore you're qualified.
And if you have charitable, if you donate a couple cars, your charitable contributions, you know.
No, that comes after.
That's after,
that comes after, yeah. So we're going to sign off this week. We're going to
wait,
come
I wasn't
back.
Done.
Oh,
can't we
ahead.
Just keep talking? We have another minute. Wait,
go right ahead.
Why are you shortchanging me on my time?
There we go.
You spend the first half of the show divulging information that I don't really care about, and then the second half of the show is when I get to shine. I feel like I get to talk more than.
Well, this is not therapy, so let's go on.
What therapy? I'm just having some fun.
You're sharing your soul here.
Don't you like to share?
No, not on the show.
I think you need
to
be more personable. You really need to step up your personality here. I think the show can grow.
I think we can grow if you just open up. I think you should hone your tax skills and your financial skills.
What does that matter?
Okay? We're going to sign off. You have anything else to say before we say goodbye?
Oh, I have plenty more to say, but we'll pick it up next week.
We'll talk next week. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from the Museum of Food and Drink. Dave Arnold and Patrick Martins have gathered a team of New York's most innovative chefs and bartenders to create a 9-course fundraiser lunch at Del Posto, Sunday, March 27th. Their intent? To kickstart the greatest food museum in the world. The menu for this unprecedented event is derived from educational themes of the museum. Chefs will draw inspiration from sources outside their normal sphere. How will a cutting-edge chef handle the Paleolithic, or a dish only using pre-Columbian ingredients? What will a modern Italian chef do with ancient Rome? The chefs include David Chang of Omofuku, Wiley Dufresne of WD-50, Mark Ladner of Del Posto, Nils Noren of the French Culinary Institute, Cesare Casella of Salumeria Rossi, Carlo Maracci of Roberta's, Brooks Headley of Del Posto, and Christina Tozzi of Momofuku Milk Bar. Bartenders include Audrey Sanders of Pegu Club, Thomas Waugh of Death & Company, Simon Ford of Pernod Ricard, Damon Bolte of Prime Meats, and Eben Clem of Be Our Guest Restaurants. Proceeds from the event will directly support the Museum of Food and Drink. Tickets are very limited and $250 per person. To purchase tickets, please visit mofad.eventbrite.com. That's mofad.eventbrite.com. Once again, mofad.eventbrite.com. Sponsored by Pernod Ricard, Heritage Foods USA, Pat LaFrieda Meats, Barterhouse Wines, Del Posto Restaurant.
Conceptual Art Party. Saturday, March 5th, Scope NYC and Roberta's host,
Space Party.
DJ. Andy Pride, Night Show. Maddie Safer, live music by Nothing. Doors at 9 p.m.